Welcome to All Sides with Anna Staker. A debate is brewing at the State House over whether public schools can say no to religious education, not in the actual school buildings or by the actual teachers, but whether districts can keep students from leaving during lunch or recess for private religious instruction. Right now, this decision is up to the local school boards. Hilliard allows religious dismissal. Westerville does not. State Senator Al Quattrona is working to change that. He has legislation that would require districts to allow LifeWise and other religious release programs into their districts. Senator Quattrona, welcome to All Sides.
Hey, glad to be here today.
Thanks for making time. So your legislation, and one that you co-sponsored when you were in the House earlier this year, they're pretty simple bills. They simply change the words may to shall. But that simple shift in words means districts wouldn't be able to decide against letting students participate in these programs if there was interest. Why is this the right thing to do?
Well, I think it's essential that we think about the parents. Parents should have the right and the opportunity to rear their child and make decisions for their children. This is simply a parental rights bill. We're making a simple change from may to shall, and all we're actually requiring them to these schools to do is simple, make a policy. That's it. The schools can determine what that policy looks like because every school's different, but make a policy. That's it.
So then if a school wanted to say only lunch or recess, that would be permissible?
Correct. They could say lunch, recess, study hall. And just to be very clear, no child is just going to go and participate on this on their own accord. They must have written parental consent. And I think that's the most important thing. This is something that parents want their child to participate in, and they can choose to do it or they can choose not to do it. But this gives the ability for a policy to be put in place so people, parents, children, everybody knows what to expect, and the school board can determine what that policy looks like.
I do want to be clear for those of you out there wondering that these kind of programs are legal. It goes all the way back to 1952. The U.S. Supreme Court decided a case called Zorach v. Clausen, and it said that religious release time programs don't constitute the establishment of a religion in a public school, providing they meet certain criteria. The instruction has to happen off campus, it has to be privately funded, and it must be optional for those attending the public school. So I think that's important context for us to have. And also, LifeWise, one of the most popular programs that we're going to hear a lot about this hour, is a Christian-based program. But Senator Quattrona, nothing in your bill would prohibit Jewish, Muslim, Hindu programs from operating, correct?
That's correct. This applies to any and all religions, and you're absolutely correct. This is constitutionally sound. And why is it constitutionally sound? Because it is using zero resources from the school. This will be from a third party, and this third party would have to be off-site, and it would be up to them to transport and get them from point A to point B, and there is absolutely zero liability to the schools.
So these bills have been moving through the legislature, and there was a hearing in the House yesterday for the House version, and Representative Sean Brennan had a question that I'm hoping you can help us answer.
I have to admit, I've kind of gone back and forth on this a little bit, kind of like you guys have. You know, I'm all in favor of parents' rights as a parent myself. As a devout Catholic, I believe in religious freedom as well. But I was also a school teacher for a long time, like many of us in the room, and I know that I'm held accountable for my students' learning, and the students are held accountable for their learning. And although it sounds easy to pull kids out of class and only affect non-core classes, which, you know, I was friends with a lot of non-core teachers, and they take their craft very seriously as well, and I always worked hard as a teacher not to make them feel like second-class citizens, because to many students, art and music and phys ed and these other courses are their priority. Mm-hmm. So I guess my question to you is, and I think you may have answered it already, I mean, isn't this just best left up to the local school board? It seems to me like it may be another regulation the state is putting on our local schools. And if we continue to, you know, tie the hands of local school boards, why do we have school boards in the state of Ohio?
What Representative Brennan is really getting at there is the idea of local control. So, Senator Cotrono, why should the state make this decision instead of the locally elected boards?
Well, a couple of things. Number one, the locals are making the decision, and that's why it's so important to get this enacted, because this bill requires that they put together policy. Every school is different. So that means that if you're in Northeast Ohio or Southwest Ohio, each school board will have a different policy. We're not saying what that policy has to look like. Let the schools determine. And to address his first comment, I'm not saying take them out of art or music. I think those are essential for our students to learn as well. I'm saying recess. I'm saying study hall. I'm saying lunch. These are things that are not taking away from the core classes or any classes of that matter. But this would be a determination for the school board to make in that locality.
But a school board couldn't make the decision under this bill to just say we don't want any of these programs in our district.
And, you know, this would just say that they have to have a policy as to what that would look like. And, you know, in some cases, in many cases across the state of Ohio, it just may not be practical. They may say, hey, you have to have the child back in 30 minutes, 45 minutes. And if you're in a very, very rural area, perhaps it doesn't work unless there's something close by that they can utilize as a space. So, you know, this is going to be very dependent upon the situation. And I want to remind everybody, this is already the law in Ohio, but it says may. So in I believe it was 2014, the 130th General Assembly passed a bipartisan piece of legislation that built the framework that allows for religious release time. So this is already going on in the state of Ohio.
Yeah, one of the common concerns from parents with students in school with these policies is they worry that LifeWise and others encourage students to get their peers involved, offering rewards like candy or ice cream parties, and that some of this can cause pain for the children who don't attend. They can be mistreated. Here's Vicki Zust, a minister at St. Mark's Episcopal Church.
Religious release times programs challenge our religious freedom. When the parents of children in my congregation choose not to allow their children to participate in religious release time programs, they are set apart from those children who do participate and have been subjected to mocking, threats, and coercion by those involved in the program, both peers and adults. This creates a hostile environment for the children of my congregation, as well as children of other denominations and faiths. That is a violation of their First Amendment and educational rights.
So what she's talking about is probably something that I don't think any of us want. We don't want kids picking on each other for not attending programs like LifeWise. How should schools and programs navigate this particular kind of issue?
Well, first of all, I mean, obviously we want to make sure that our children are safe, protected, not bullied, not harassed. And that is not, in fact, the intent of this legislation. And I can't recall hearing about any stories of that nature. That being said, this is simply an opportunity for parents to make that decision if they want their child to participate. And if another child wants to, and a couple of other kids want to get together and there be another program out there, the policy will determine what that looks like. You have to ask yourself, where does one person's religious rights start, another one ends? But I think what we're missing the point of is that this is already allowed. And that comment that was made is actually fundamentally and legally wrong. There is absolutely no, constitutionality issues here, First Amendment right issues by allowing this to go on. I mean, that the Supreme Court has been very clear on this since the early 1950s.
So what recourse would schools have if a program wasn't bringing children back on time? If the kids who attend are bullying other students, what could a school do short of kicking the program out to be like, hey, you really need to be a better partner with us?
Well, I think that we got to pull back a little bit.
Okay.
Why is it the program's fault, right? I think that if those issues are going on, then those children need to be, the administration needs to direct that and lead that. Because if it's not going to be, Christian-based or a based program, it's going to be not participating in basketball. It's not going to be participating in some other extracurricular activities or things of that nature. So I think that if that's going on, they need to address the bigger issue, the elephant in the room, and say, what can they do as whether it's the school or getting parents involved and saying, figuring out this bullying issue, because this is a totally different issue. That's bullying. That's harassment. There are already rules in their procedure that the locals have to deal with bullying and harassment. And if it's not going to say like a LifeWise, then it's going to be going to, basketball, or it's going to be, some other extracurricular activity.
So these programs have been growing in popularity. The largest provider of religious release in Ohio is called LifeWise. And their executive director, Joel Penton, wasn't able to come on the show today, but he did testify in support of this legislation. Here's what he said about LifeWise exceeding all of its growth expectations in recent years.
We think this desire was always there in parents, and they just had no idea this was possible. When people find out it's possible to have Bible education as part of their public school day, they get incredibly excited about it. And we're all well aware of the angst and hand-wringing that is out there about how the Bible has been removed from the public school day, how prayer has been removed from the public school day. And what released time offers is a legal way to do it that honors the principle of separation of church and state, because the students are physically separated from the state school. The finances are separate from the state, separate from state compulsion being entirely optional. And so parents find out they can do this, and they get incredibly excited. And yes, we're seeing exponential growth, not just in Ohio, but elsewhere.
Is that what you hear from parents, Senator Controna? Are you hearing from folks that are just excited and would like this in their area?
Absolutely. I have people approaching me before the bill and after the bill was introduced that I drafted. People are excited. There's a massive excitement behind this, as there should be. Listen, this is great. This is an opportunity for people to allow their child to still participate and go to a public school and then be able to have the rearing that they feel is essential for their religious upbringing. And I want to point out that, the numbers are astonishing. It's incredible how many children that participate in programs like this, like LifeWise, actually excel in school. They actually perform better in school. There's so much better data that's out there for that, which is exciting. And I think that, at least in my district and districts all across the state, because I've gotten so many emails of support in favor of this policy, in favor of this legislation. And I think this is a good thing for public schools and a good thing for parents and their children.
Yeah, that was something that Mr. Patton talked about in his testimony. He said that, according to studies that he's looked at, children who attend these programs have better mental health, better grades, even better public school attendance. So he certainly made the case for what he's offering. But I do wonder, what do you say to people who have this other question of, why not do it before school? Why not do it after school? Why not do Sunday school? Or if it's so important, send your kid to private school. Basically, why not take any of those options instead of during the day?
Well, I don't think that a child should be precluded from participating in public schools because they want to also have a religious release time. I think that a child, every Ohioan should be afforded the option to choose public schools if they want that. The parents should be able to choose that for their child. So, I think that's a huge distinction behind that. And also, doing it before school. Well, I mean, school starts pretty early. Does it make sense to do that necessarily? Probably not. And, why not? I mean, there's plenty of time in that class, whether you're eating lunch or you're at a study hall or you're at some other recess, some other juncture where, why not be able to have this? Why not allow for them to participate in this? And they shouldn't have to be forced to go to a private school. And there may not be there may not be a private school that has their particular religion nearby. So once again, they would be precluded from being able to have that experience.
I know you got to run. So one final question. We only have a couple weeks left until the General Assembly ends. Do you think this can get through in lame duck?
I think that it can, and I think that it should, and I think there's a lot of support. Listen, I drafted the bill alongside Representative Click while I was in the House. Now I'm in the state Senate, and we're pushing it here in the Senate. I just had a hearing on it yesterday. I think there's a lot of traction, a lot of momentum, and I hope to see this happen and go forward. And if it doesn't, I'm not done fighting the good fight, and I will be more than happy to reintroduce this next General Assembly and have more of a track to run it on. But frankly, as far as I'm concerned, my colleagues are extremely excited, both in the House and the Senate, to see this voted on and enacted into law.
That was State Senator Al Cotrona. Thank you so much.
Hey, thank you. Have a good day.
Coming up, we're headed to Westerville, where the divide over religious release has unfolded at their school board meetings. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
No matter what happens in Washington, the NPR Politics Podcast is here for you. For the latest news, insights, and analysis from the election and beyond, listen to the NPR Politics Podcast.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. Religious release programs from public schools have been around for decades. Here in Ohio, local school boards get to decide whether these programs, where students leave their public schools during the day for private lessons about God and faith, whether that's okay, or whether they think it would just interfere too much with classroom instruction. But that discretion at the local level could go away. There are bills in the State House that would mandate all Ohio public schools permit religious release. Senator Cotrona just told us why he supports that and why he's pushing for it. Now we're joined by Christina Collins, the Executive Director for Honesty for Ohio Education. Collins is a former member of the State Board of Education and has taught at both the K-12 and collegiate level. Dr. Collins, welcome to All Sides.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
We're also joined by a Westerville parent, Jacqueline Fraley. She's a founding member of Westerville Parents United. It's a local group that lobbied her district to rescind its policy on religious release. Welcome to All Sides, Jacqueline.
Thank you.
So, Jacqueline, how did you first become aware of LifeWise and the religious release policy in Westerville?
My daughter is a first grader, and last year I was talking with a mom at the park in the Westerville School District. She said, "Oh, are you going to enroll your daughter in LifeWise Academy?" I had no clue what it was. It took me down this trail discovering what it is. And for us, it really took me down the trail of what happens to the children that don't attend, because my family is a non-Christian family. We have a different faith. And so it really brought to me what happens to the other children. And what I found was really stressful and disturbing, especially when you're focusing on the elementary school level. This isn't a program that is coming into high schools. They're looking at first graders, second graders, third graders. And I feel that it's really problematic for the children that do not attend.
Can you be a little more specific there? I mean, you don't have to name names or anything, but did you hear from other parents?
I did. We have parents in our group. We have one member, her and her wife are members of the LGBTQIA community. Their daughter was in the school in third and fourth grade with LifeWise and had instances of bullying, had instances of children challenging her mom's marriage and saying that they would all be going to hell because they are members of that community. We had children who were not of the Christian faith that were, you know, and it's not outright aggressive bullying, but it's comments like, "Oh, well, then you're going to hell." And because those are the things, you know, for LifeWise Academy, which is a very, very more evangelical, they are not LGBTQ affirming. Even in their frequently asked questions are like, divorce is a sin, to that level. You know, it's very hard when some of these messages are sent to first, second and third graders, very young students.
Christina, your group wasn't initially opposed to this legislation. How did you all reach a decision to oppose it?
Thanks. So we launched something this year called Honesty Teams, which is our on-the-ground grassroots organizing, bringing people together across Ohio. And as you said, we were initially just an interested party on this issue. But the more we were hearing concerns, we were hearing hundreds of concerns from people across Ohio about one particular program, LifeWise Academy. And when the proponent testimony happened in June, it became very clear the majority of the proponent testimony was from LifeWise Academy. So kind of putting two and two together here, the concerns that we were hearing on the ground about this one program, combined with the fact that this one program seemed to be pushing the legislation, is what drove the coalition into becoming an opponent to the bill.
So Christina used to be on the state school board, as I said, used to teach. Why do you think this is a decision best left to local school boards?
I think what we've seen just in this year in Ohio is many local communities having these discussions. There are a lot of potential liabilities for local districts. The Department of Education and Workforce recently sent an email out calling these school-related functions. And in doing that, they put school boards in precarious positions to make these decisions because school boards now have to allow anyone who runs a program like this to have that program in place. Otherwise, they could potentially be seen as being discriminatory against a religion. So there is just that level of liability that's involved. And not to mention, as I said, with the hundreds of stories that we were hearing, problems that parents are facing in local communities, those discussions are the most important discussions to be happening, whether or not these programs are right for local communities, whether or not they're being implemented well at the local level. And those kinds of conversations, those decisions are best left between the district and their parents and community members.
During testimony on these bills, supporters of LifeWise and other religious release programs talked about their own rights, how they don't want their children to be denied this kind of opportunity. That included a mom named Cindy Reed and her son, Caleb. Here's her son.
I'd love the opportunity to have a release time program at my school because I think it would help kids affirm their beliefs and help their mental health. Unfortunately, in spite of nearly 500 people in my community that said they would support this type of programming, the Board of Education has denied it. Why is it possible that a Board of Education can make a decision to block a release time program when so many people want that opportunity? I would like the option for me and my friends to learn about God during the school day. Having this opportunity should be a choice parents can make for their kids. Thank you.
Any reaction from either of you?
I do. I like the choice of the word affirm. You know, I find it really interesting that some of the senators that are doing this and the group that is behind this wants their rights affirmed, but also want to deny the rights to transgender who are fighting against inclusion in our schools for our transgender, our LGBTQ, and also other religions. I think it's looking at schools are supposed to be an inclusive environment for all. And they're trying to deny affirmation to one group while wanting their group to be affirmed. I think this also goes to the point of this is not denying someone the right to teach their children religion. This is just whether or not the district decides it belongs in the school day. Putting this on the districts would bring great burden to the school districts. Just the argument to have the policy was hours of school board meetings, hours of testimony, hours that took away from the regular business of the school. So say a policy is made, how often are they going to petition against it till they get what they want or how they want it? And this puts a lot of work on our already overburdened school boards, school administrators, and school staff that are already overworked. This will put a great deal back on the districts.
Christina, I wonder what recourse would schools have, do you think, under this program if, say, they weren't bringing the kids back on time, or they were perhaps in the view of the school over incentivizing recruitment?
That is one of the key issues with this change in policy, only changing one word from may to shall. Under the may condition, a local school can decide they don't want to have the policy anymore and they can rescind it, just like Westerville did. Things aren't working, program isn't working, we're not going to continue to do this. Under the shall, otherwise will, that districts will have this policy, it inherently allows any program that meets that policy. So school districts will need to be careful about what would be in those policies. Things like mandatory BCI and FBI background checks, those kinds of things need to be set in policies as guardrails. But it does not allow for a district to say that they're going to rescind that policy at any point in time. So there's no accountability for a district. One thing that could be done is to say is to give districts the ability to do that, to cancel a program if it's not working, if they're not adhering to the policies. But currently, as is written, it does not give districts the ability to do that.
Jacqueline, you also raised some questions about liability and what kinds of liability these programs assume for children that they take off campus.
Yes. You know, one of the interesting things and one of the deciding factors was in the revised code and everything and in the school board policy, it had stated previously that LifeWise and other programs are to assume liability. LifeWise themselves had a very robust waiver that they had parents sign. And they rescinded the waiver after our parents group found this discrepancy. And so the questions of, well, this waiver didn't absolve them, but they have since rescinded it. So I think they found that, you know, they were not in compliance. Another big concern is there is no security for how students are signed up. Often these permission slips are signed at community festivals, events. You can go to an online form and sign up the student, and there's no proof that the parent or custodial parent signed the child up for this program. One of the final confirmation steps is just confirming a confirmatory email, to which most students in elementary school can do by third and fourth grade. So that leaves great concerns. With the school district, to enroll my daughter, I had to give her birth certificate, my driver's license, verify parentage. None of that is going on. And this isn't just about LifeWise. This is a broader scope problem of, if other RTRI programs come into play, how is this compliance going to be tracked? How are they going to be managed? Who is going to manage that? And again, this is putting a lot of burden on the school districts to come up with these policies and say, okay, in our district, you have to have this, you have to have that. And they're going to have to track that compliance. And that's a lot of work.
Yeah, Christina, I think one of the concerns would be if they don't background check the people. And I'm not saying anybody, I want to be clear, I'm not saying that anybody who teaches at any of these programs have any kind of bad background or ill intentions. But if that were to be the case, what kind of liability might the school board be under?
And I think that goes back to what Jacqueline was just saying. There's confusion right now. As we saw yesterday during the testimony, there's confusion about what that release of liability statement that LifeWise used to use, what that actually means. What does it mean when a parent signs off on that form? What does it mean when a district allows LifeWise in and they have that kind of policy, or any program, any future program that could potentially have some sort of release of liability? The law does say that the program itself is liable, but that seems to be confusing and yet to be determined. So why do we have to exist in a situation where something has to happen for that to be sorted out in the courts? Rather than, as I mentioned yesterday, rather than having a baseline of expectation that our school districts are keeping our children safe, why should we enable programs like LifeWise to have these questionable practices with no oversight or accountability to potentially put children in dangerous situations in the first place?
One of the questions that got raised during testimony is, why not send your kid to a religious school or a Sunday school or a program before school starts or after school starts? The executive director of LifeWise had an answer for that, and Joel Penton could not join us today, but I'm going to play a clip of his testimony to lawmakers on this specific question.
Now, why parents want release time, many parents think it sends a very strong message to their children when there's no mention of God throughout the entire school week. The message that their child receives is that this must not be important. So By installing religious instruction into their child's school day, it sends a message to their kid. This is very important. That's one of the reasons we have so many parents that put their kids in private religious school. It's also a logistical issue. Before and after school, there's often busing issues. Kids are getting on the bus. And so there's a few reasons why during the school day is important to us.
Dr. Collins, what's your reaction to that?
So my initial reaction is about installing religious instruction into the school day. I think that's such an interesting way of phrasing. In this situation, we're talking about installing one form of religion into the school day, because this is one Christian organization that is very well funded, that is trying to get into every district in Ohio and go nationwide. So we're talking about one religion and installing one religion. Interestingly, in our social studies standards, there is inclusion for instruction on all religions and on where religions come from in general. The idea that public education is here for what we have in common, and a commonality is that people in general have religious beliefs and that those have a historical meaning and a historical importance to various groups of people. That is something that is taught in schools, in many schools. So it's interesting that his reaction is to mention installing religious instruction in our schools.
Jacqueline, I want to bring it back to this school board meeting in Westerville. It was pretty contentious. It went on for a long time. There were even some disruptions and questions over one of the board members' Muslim faith. What was it like being in that room for those hours?
It was tense, especially there was times on both sides. But for me, it was felt there were times of unkindness. I was bullied myself. I was standing at a door, standing with a friend, talking, and someone walked by me and just went, "Sinners," and kept walking. And I was just dumbfounded. Like, these are adults who have their self-control to do this. And it kind of gave me a glimpse into things that could be happening in the school day to children when adults are behaving this way. My daughter was in the room for a couple of the school board meetings to watch her mom do big things. And people were booing in my speech, you know, and she asked, you know, "Mommy, why did they yell at you?" And that was a very different experience. LifeWise brought people in from outside of the community at other school board meetings. When you look at the school board sign up, a number of their speakers did not even live in Westerville. News reporter had a hard time finding a Westerville parent to interview for their side, because at one point we asked, "Will the parents of enrolled students please stand up?" And almost all of our side stood up, and only a few parents stood up on that side. Kids were outside holding signs, and someone had asked, "Oh, what school do you go to?" And they said, "Oh, we're homeschooled." So a lot of the people who showed up weren't the people who actually have the skin in the game. And even with Joel Penton saying, you know, this is important to happen in the school week, the school day is 6 hours. This does not forbid parents from bringing religion into their children's lives the other, you know, 18 hours of the day. Kids do after school sports. Parents take them to after school activities. They do school sports after school, before school and trainings. The parents are choosing. They could have LifeWise at that time, or they could have sports. Parents are making a choice.
I can't remember which one. Like, all the testimony kind of blurs together now. I've watched so many hours of it, but I can't remember which one of you cited an example from Fredericktown Elementary. There was a principal's it's you, Jacqueline. What
yes.
happened with a Hindu student there?
So, again, a violation that a school board would have to deal with, because the schools are not to in any way encourage enrollment. And the principal, who is seen as a great, amazing, big person, is walking the student around the school. To a six-year-old, that looks like endorsement, and was telling these children, trying to recruit them to get their parents to bring them to LifeWise.
The principal
was walking with a LifeWise representative around the school. A student disclosed that they were Muslim. Or I'm sorry, not Muslim, that they were Hindu. And according to the complaint that was filed with the Freedom from Religion group, which actually had a statement to the school, which had a response from the school, stated the LifeWise representative told the child, "You need Jesus. Ask your parents to enroll you in LifeWise." And as, again, someone who is on the other side of that terrifies me, that someone would walk into school and tell my daughter her faith or what her parents believe at home is wrong and she should believe something else. Because I'm pretty sure most LifeWise parents would be very upset if this was the rules were reversed.
Christina, final question for you. The Republicans control the legislature here in Ohio. They have the governorship. What do you think the odds are that this becomes law?
I think if it's not right now, I think it will be in the future. And I think just based on the questioning and the conversation yesterday in committee, it's very clear that they're couching this as a parents' rights issue. But only one side of parents' rights are being considered, as Jacqueline mentioned earlier. Where are my rights as a parent who wants secular public education for my children? So I think that it definitely stands a chance of passing, whether now or later. And the pushing the responsibility for potential liability onto local school boards instead of the legislature taking accountability and making sure that the legislation they're passing covers local school boards and provides some level of protection is just wrong. It's wrong that's their scope of what local control means, that it means that at the local level, school boards and administrators should be fully responsible for everything that could potentially ever go wrong with any RTRI program. So I think they're really flawed in their thinking about this.
That was Christina Collins, the Executive Director for Honesty for Ohio Education. Thank you so much. And thank you to Jacqueline Fraley, a founding member of Westerville Parents United. Thank you so much. Coming up, what are the chances this bill and other education bills become law during lame duck? That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
No matter what happens in Washington, the NPR Politics Podcast is here for you. For the latest news, insights, and analysis from the election and beyond, listen to the NPR Politics Podcast.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. We've been talking about a bill that would require Ohio schools to release students during the day for religious instruction if a group like LifeWise wanted to come and offer services. That is a change from the current wording, which says may, not shall, not must. Joining us now to talk about this bill's chances and other education reforms moving through the legislature is Laura Hancock, politics and policy reporter for Cleveland.com. Welcome back, Laura.
Hello, Anna.
We've been talking about religious release programs, specifically LifeWise, and I wonder, are you seeing this in Northeast Ohio in the areas Cleveland.com covers?
You're not seeing it so much in the cities, like the larger metros, but you are seeing it in the suburbs. Every time a school board goes in to vote to enact a policy, there are always a ton of people coming to reject it, ask them to reject it. And I mean, there's even retired teachers who are saying, like, I taught students basic computer programming, keyboard skills, typing skills. It's not a core subject, but you can't really survive in this world nowadays without some of those skills. And so, it's not frivolous that they're leaving, because right now the law is you can't have released time during core subjects, which would be like math, English language arts, science, etc. So
it could be music, gym, recess, lunch,
right?
Variety of different choices.
Mm-hmm.
So Republicans in the Ohio State House have a supermajority. Do you see something like this LifeWise bill or this religious release bill, I should be more clear, it's more than LifeWise, passing in the next couple of weeks?
I think this is a good indication that this is a priority of leadership. Now, a million things can happen during the chaotic lame duck period. Bills pass really fast. They don't get a ton of hearings necessarily. A controversial bill will be crammed into like a bill that's
more benign.
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes it's even like addressing an emergency. So then everybody has to vote for the bill to fix the emergency, even though they don't like what was crammed in there. You know, so we just don't know if they'll get sidetracked on something else or if it will pass. I think the best thing to say right now is that this is a priority of leadership. Yeah.
For those wanting an example, during the last lame duck 2 years ago, there was a bill about the sale of baby chickens and like how many you have to buy at a single time that became a bill about drilling for natural gas underneath state parks. So you never really know what's going to get moved where.
Right, right. And we have another, we have other examples of that. Today on Wednesday, we're talking, the Ohio Senate is meeting this afternoon, and there's rumors, we haven't seen their agenda yet, but there's talk that a bill called, I have all these written down, sorry.
She's got a lot of notes. It's very impressive.
It is a bill on, it's a Senate bill on college Credit Plus, which is the program for high school students to either leave school and take classes at community colleges or four-year colleges for college credit, or sometimes faculty teach them inside the classroom, but it's a way for students to kind of get a leg up on college. And it's just making some pretty non-controversial changes to College Credit Plus. And they put inside of it the what's known as the bathroom bill. That's House Bill
104. I have my own notes.
Senate Bill. Oh, yes, you do. Okay, so Senate Bill 104 could be in the Senate today. House Bill 183 is the bathroom bill. It's a bathroom and locker room bill, and it's for K-12 and colleges. And it says that you can't use the locker room or the bathroom of the gender in which you identify. You have to use the gender of your birth. So this is pretty controversial. Who knows if it would really pass on its own. So it was the Ohio House put in the bathroom bill into this non-controversial College Credit Plus bill. The Ohio Senate needs to, what they call, concur. Like, they have to look at it and see if they agree or not. And word on the street is that it could happen as soon as today. So, you know, it's kind of a big social issue to kind of start off lame duck with.
Yeah, and this religious release program could end up being amended into any number mm-hmm. of education bills. There's also a new bill to ban colleges and public universities from asking for preferred pronouns on college and job applications.
Mm-hmm. Also, and sexuality, gender. And this is being sponsored by a woman from Portage County, Representative Gail Pavliga. Yeah. She's from Portage County. She actually lost her primary, her Republican primary, to somebody else. And so she will not be serving in the legislature. So it's interesting that she actually decided to introduce a bill last week when we are definitely in the last stretch. Every bill that doesn't pass is going to die by the end of the year. And will have to be reintroduced next year. So the question is she trying to angle for maybe an elected position closer to home? Now that she's living in the legislature, maybe there's political points she can score by sponsoring this. I don't know if this is going to be a priority because in the Ohio Senate, she was not supported by leadership there. So this might be more of a statement thing, but yeah.
But yeah, you never know as things get moving. One of the biggest education bills hanging out there mm-hmm. is one we know as Senate Bill 83. Mm-hmm. That is the one that would ensure, quote, intellectual diversity in public colleges and classrooms. It's the one that would change diversity programs, teacher tenure, teacher student evaluations of their professors. It used to have rules about strikes and unions. That was taken out. It is the big higher ed bill.
Mm-hmm. So this bill, just to give you an idea, it started off at 39 pages, It went up to 93 pages when it passed the Senate. Then it went down to 66 pages, and it passed out of a House committee, and it has been waiting for months now, months, to get onto the House floor. It has not gotten on the House floor, and the sponsor of the bill is from Lake County, a guy named Jerry Serino, who himself served as a trustee formerly of Lakeland Community College up there in Lake County. And he did a press conference in June saying he was putting his bill on pause because it wasn't moving in the House, and maybe he'd have to wait for a more favorable environment, and it could be next year. Who knows? You know, no bill is dead until they gavel out CINDIA, you know, at the end of the year. So we don't know what's going to happen with that. But I think, you know, right now it seems like it's open season on higher education, not just in Ohio, but sort of everywhere. And you're thinking about, you know, even in Congress, like there were professors of Ivy League schools who had to answer questions about the protests against the war in Gaza, you know. And so
there's conversation about getting rid of the Federal Department of Education.
Yeah, yeah. Under Trump, there's a lot of stuff going on. So so this bill, I don't know. I wouldn't be totally surprised if, say, sections of it, not maybe all 66 pages, but sections of it ended up in some other bill. He wanted to totally ban DEI, but that didn't fly because sometimes to get a grant, you have to show that you've got DEI certain requirements met. So he kind of softened that language. He originally wanted to outright ban research with China and any kind of gifts from China and any kind of collaboration. Well, there's a lot of like scientific collaboration with, you know, I mean, China's a huge country. They have a lot of universities. And so so people objected to that. And so he sort of softened that just to say you can't take any gifts from China. You can't take money. But the research component can stay intact. And then he has a process set up where there's this perception that it's very, you know, that everybody's really liberal in higher ed. And I think it's a fair, you know, perception. However, they kind of sometimes go to the extent of saying students are being brainwashed. And I mean, I know plenty of conservative people, including most of the people in the legislature, who are college educated. You know what I mean? So I don't know if they're really being brainwashed. But what they want to do with this bill is they want to have students and employees of the university be known that we have this commitment to intellectual diversity, which means, you know, conservative viewpoints too. And they want every school to establish like a complaint process if you feel like you're not being heard. Now, the university professors are very concerned about this because they're afraid it's going to like have conspiracy theories are basically going to have to be treated like academically rigorous because that's intellectually, you know, that's intellectual diversity. Now, the legislature, whenever I say, well, will a student have to be given, you know, a good grade if they say that the earth is flat, they always laugh it away. I don't know how this would work in practice. I mean, it's interesting.
We did get a question. We got an email from Don who was wondering if we're mandating religious release programs, whether we should still provide vouchers for private religious schools. But probably the answer would be the legislature will say yes to both. But vouchers is another big conversation that we're having only because we're approaching $1 billion a year mm-hmm. for the program.
Yeah, and for the first time in the capital budget, which is like the state building construction budget, they gave money to a handful of private schools, and some of them were religious affiliated. In fact, I think most of them were religious affiliated. So, I don't think that the voucher thing is going anywhere. However, it is a thing that Republicans like to say who support release time. They'll say, well, you complain about vouchers, isn't this a way to keep kids in public school because they can still get their religion but they don't have to leave and take a voucher, you know. But yeah, that is kind of a dichotomy that exists.
Yeah, there's also a bill about bullying that may or may not go anywhere. There's mm-hmm. so many bills that pop up in these last mm-hmm. few weeks. I don't know if it's comforting or frightening that all of us, even our elected officials, procrastinate until the very last minute.
Yeah. Well, and I it's not just an Ohio thing. I mean, I've covered three state legislatures.
It's always the last minute.
They don't do anything unless it's a crisis. It's just like the nature of organizations that are elected, I think. There are several child care bills. And actually, this is something that's not, It's kind of bipartisan. You have a number of Republicans and a number of Democrats, especially in the Ohio House, who see this as, you know, a problem, a workforce issue. The Ohio Chamber of Commerce says that, you know, we need to fix the child care system because they can't get workers, or they can't get workers to go full time because those people can't find, you know, safe and, you know, quality daycare for their kids. And so one of the bills is called TriShare, and they do it in Michigan. And what it is the employer pays a piece, the state government pays a piece, and then the worker pays a piece, but the worker's piece is no more than one third of the total daycare cost. And that would cost about $150 million to $200 million a year. There are bills for childcare that would make it refundable or non-refundable tax credit.
And so, yeah, we'll have to see what it passes. And you can follow Laura Hancock, politics and policy reporter for Cleveland.com, on X for all the latest on education news. Thanks, as always, for joining us. And thank you all for listening to All Sides here on 89.7 NPR News.